Okay, let's give a warm Tulare County welcome to our warm-up speaker, Sue Ellen.
Hello, my name is Sue Ellen. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to welcome our newcomers and our visitor from out of town. And I hope that you newcomers hear whatever you need to hear to keep coming back in the door one more time. Because for me, when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not jump into this thing. In fact, I didn't even realize this even belonged to us at the very beginning. I have a story about that. You guys, I went to an AA meeting after a year and saw this thing shaped as a cake. And I said, what's that? And they go, they said, well, that's our big book. And I said, we have a book? I didn't even know we had a book, you know, because I kept rolling in these rooms, just showing up once a week in my first year. But the reason I rolled up once a week is because I was so miserable out there doing alcohol and drugs and so forth. My sobriety date is August 26, 1990. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. And my sponsor is mean, and she's sitting right there. And she's been my sponsor for, we figured out, 16 years. And before her, I had Charlene. Does everybody remember Charlene? She was my sponsor. And that woman was sweet. What a switch, man. And anyway, but with Charlene, I did, you know, did my fourth step. Eventually, that woman gently got me in there because, you know, I just was one of those alcoholics that just, I just felt like I was so special, you know. And eventually, that so specialness would get me in trouble, you know. And that's why I say I hope you hear it. Because, you know, the thing that kept me coming back in these rooms was the identity, the identifying with your stories. Because I looked in the room and I just said, holy crap, we look like the DMV. You know, every walk of life is in this room. Think about it. Every social, economics, every person in here, and I look across at you and I go, you don't look like an alcoholic. You look like an alcoholic. Shouldn't be wearing that. But anyway, you know, and that's, and I used to think that, and I used to just look around the rooms, and I remember I used to go, and I got sober in Visalia, okay? So whenever I drive through Visalia, oh, I got to watch that clock, because I don't want to make this a speaker meeting for me. But anyway, But I drove through Visalia, and tonight when I was driving Carol the back way, I says, yeah, there's the grocery store that I used to, you know, throw, you know, a bunch of beer in and put bananas on and cereal and everything, and then tell the checker that I was having a party for one, you know. I used to hide my alcoholism because Visalia is a small town, you know, and I'll never forget when I started doing my amends, and they give you that little look, that little side look, yeah, we knew. You know, when you start saying, I'm an alcoholic and I have a problem. You can't hide it. It doesn't hide very well, by the way. So anyway, I found these rooms, and I stayed in these rooms by the grace of God. And then I found and fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous, the steps. When you get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you will find a life that you never, ever dreamed of. And, you know, when I first came in here, I didn't want to hear that your life was good. My life sucked. I had three ungrateful children that wanted to eat all the time, you know, and I wanted to drink and I wanted to party, you know, and I had a career, barely, and I just, you know, I just did the minimum to keep you off my back. And that same personality came in these rooms to do the minimum to not get anything but to stay sober. But after a while, that will get you drunk again, or it will get you totally miserable. So if you don't get in that big book, because that's the steps, you know, the fellowship is amazing, but the program is the book of Alcoholics Anonymous and those steps. And the most important part of the steps is the finding the God of your understanding. And that is what changed my life. Because you told me to learn to be rigorously honest with you, which I learned to do with this woman, that taught me to be honest with myself. Because if I could be honest and love myself, do you think I would need you guys? I could figure this out on my own if I was kind to myself or nice. But I wasn't. I have no idea. I had no coping skills. I had nothing. And I can go into all kinds of reasons why, but that's just another, you know, speaker meeting. But anyway, but you guys, by learning to love you and to be of service, the book teaches us to get into service. And because of that, that taught me how to love me and to be of service to me. I learned the balance. I couldn't learn balance until I came in these rooms. And then I learned to let someone love me. And that's what I did with Carol. Carol, I don't tell anyone, but I am her favorite. She has a lot of sponsees. None of them are here, so I can say it at a podium. You know, and then, you know, you get into this wonderful part of the program where you help another alcoholic stay sober. And one of the most beautiful things I have in my life is I work with other women, and I help them stay sober. But my favorite story, I'm going to give my only story of Carol, and then I'm going to wrap this up. Okay, so I picked Carol. I moved to Fresno. You know, after a while, you've got to get out of town because too many people know you. And you haven't cleaned it up well enough to be a decent human being yet. So anyway, I moved to Fresno, and I got Carol. And the first reason, okay, I'm going to say only one swear word, but the reason I picked her is because she said fuck in the meetings publicly, and I love that. And she was cranky, and I love that too. But I love that she spoke the truth. So I asked her to be my sponsor. So then she said, yeah. And then we were sitting in a restaurant, and I'm going to give her my little spiel. And I thought she was going to be all happy to have me as a sponsor. And I had a real huge resentment to my mother at the time, and because she was an alcoholic, and you know, she owed me amends, and she's a mess and everything. So I told Carol how what a shitty mom I had and all that crap, and she goes, and I thought she'd be all on my side, you know, because I had this lousy, and she turns to me and she says, your mother doesn't owe you a effing thing. What you owe your mother is love, respect, and kindness. You don't owe her nothing. I mean, you don't. She doesn't owe you nothing. Because I wanted my mom to say she was sorry for being a crappy mom. So I was pissed at Carol, and I made a terrible mistake, I thought, in 1 minute. And then I went off, and I followed directions. Another thing, newcomers, take suggestions, because you're not wired really tight yet. So take suggestions. And really, most of the people in here that are giving you suggestions are going to, if they're not coming from the book, they're really for your benefit. And they will. And so I took the suggestion. So I called my mom, and I told her, okay, Mom, I want to come visit you. She's back in Kansas City. And so I got on a plane and went to see my mom. And my whole intent to go to my mother was to not say I was sorry or to give her amends and all that crap. It's to do a living amends and to treat her with respect and kindness and love. And I took her to all her favorite places, took her to her hokey-ass restaurants. I bought her that cheap-ass perfume she loves. And she puts way too much on and smells. But anyway, I did all those things, and I did it with love and kindness and with a good heart. For the first time, I did it with the right heart. And so we're sitting on this deck, rocking, and she turns to me and says, I'm really sorry that I was such a shitty mom. I don't want to talk about any more of that, but I just want to say I'm sorry. And it was over with. But that's all she could do. That was all she could come up with. And at that moment, I saw the grace of love, what love does, and kindness, and the good grace of God. And it taught so much, because I'm the one who benefited by giving and loving that woman. And from that point on, to the day she died, I loved her, and I tried to do anything and everything I could to help her and send her money. And you know what? Every time I did, I felt good. And I'm glad, because I took the directions of my sponsor, who knew that none of it was any of my business, but what's my business is how I treat you, how I love you, and how I work this program. And that's mine. And you guys have taught me that. And I'm so grateful that that you're in my life. The fellowship has been so good to me all these years. And I always want to remind myself by walking in these rooms that we have hindsight and we have foresight in these rooms. And we're always there for each other. And no matter if we don't like each other, we do love each other. So anyway, keep coming back.
Let's give a rousing welcome for our featured speaker, Carol.
It went up again.
Whoops.
I don't do tall. I'm Carol Alcoholic. Girl, fuck. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
No? I stood better when I was drunk. Okay. We got it. I'm not hissing. I'm the bitch. I'm Carol, like I said, I'm an alcoholic. I have a t-shirt, by the way, that somebody brought me that says I'm not a bitch, I'm the bitch, and it's Miss Bitch to you. And I wear it proudly. These people say bitch is a bad thing. I don't think so. My sobriety date is November 1st, 1971. I started drinking when I was 16. I was born in Fresno, raised in Fresno, got drunk in Fresno, got sober in Fresno, still live in Fresno. Traveled the world, but I'm still there. Anyway, I started drinking when I was 16 because I looked older than I was, and so I drank in bars, and that was before everybody got pissy about drunks and teenagers drinking and all that stuff. So, you know, I drank drunk, got stopped by the cops multiple times, but in those days they said, go home, honey, or they'd follow you home. So I didn't think it was a problem. When I was 21, I was in an automobile accident, and I got hit naturally by a drunk driver. And I got some money for the insurance, and I went to Europe for a year and drank my way. Went on the boat over. All over Europe I drank and did kind of stuff. And I think I was a blackout drinker, and I think I was a slut, but I'm not really sure. It's difficult when you're a blackout drinker, except this year I'm going to be 80 years old in October, and in November I'm going to be 45 years sober, so I've been sober more than half my life. And the part I was drunk was fun for a while, and then fun, like I say, fun and problems, and then no fun at all. Like I say, I was in Europe, and I was 22 years old and still a virgin, I think. And I got laid on a beach in Barcelona, and sand in your hoo-hoo is not attractive. I'm not judging, I'm just saying it. And I thought, like that old song, is that all there is? Well, needless to say, I tried it more than once. And I drank more than once. And this is 1959, and I thought I was pregnant. And I thought, I can't go home at 1959, pregnant, unmarried. You know, they'll tar and feather me. I live in a cow town. Fresno's a small town, and they don't do that kind of thing. So I decided I can't go home. So I went on this beach, Playa San Juan in Spain. And I was in my bathing suit, of course. If it had been Joan Crawford, it had been a Golden Maid dress. But you don't even know who those people don't even know who that. She was always walking into the water and dying, like, but always in a Golden Maid dress. I have no idea why, but she did. Anyway, I didn't have one, so I went walking in the water, and I was going to drown myself. And I walked, and I walked, and I walked. And the water came up to here and went down to there. And up to here, and way down to there. And I turned around and I said, oh shit, I'm going to have to walk a long way back or start swimming. I don't know which. And so apparently I was not supposed to kill myself. And that was my one and only attempt at suicide. I'm not a suicidal. I'm going to kick your ass, I'll rip your face off and beat you to death with it, but I'm not going to kill myself. I'm not up to that. So that was my one attempt at that. And then, like I said, it didn't work. But I went back to Spain in 2000. My family went over there, and I went out on that beach, and I took two steps and dropped like a rock. And I'm thinking, where did I walk? Or there was a sandbar, or something had shifted in the 30 years I was gone. I don't know. But I couldn't find it, and I was not about to do it this time. So anyway, I drank my way through most of my 20s. And when I was in my early 30s, I started getting that uncomfortable, I don't like who I am. I was raised with a moral code. I was raised Pentecostal, and they were laying hands on me and dipping me in water and doing all kinds of shit to make me better, and nothing happened. I'm still being the dick that I wanted to be. And so about my 33, 34, things started getting hard, and I started wanting to do something different and didn't know how. And I remember sitting in my room one night saying, God, either help me or let me die. And I don't care which. I don't care. And so not too long after that, I got in another 12-step program because I weighed 300 pounds. And I'm one of those drunks that drink and eat at the same time. You know, I don't need these little skinny shits that drink and they get skinny and they're wonderful. I don't know. It's just 2 o'clock in the morning, breakfast after getting drunk. I don't know what that is. But anyway, I had a problem. And I went to a meeting that had an AA speaker come to us. And this is kind of tacky, but that's how I got to AA, is that he was tall and dark and handsome. And he had a voice that came up from his toenails. And I was in lust. And I said, I want what he has. I had no idea what it was, but I wanted it. Turned out it didn't happen, but he became a very good friend of mine. But I got me to a meeting where I saw this lady there that was, I would say, about 50-ish, and she looked like a shriveled up prune, and she was sober, and I'm thinking, why? 35, I still look kind of okay. And I thought, geez, if I get sober, am I going to look like that? And I did. But, you know, I don't give a shit anymore. At the time, I cared. And I started going to AA meetings, and I was scared to death. And I was one of those that, and of course, when I got sober, people like Annette and Don and a whole lot of people, newcomers were to be silent. You know, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. You've got nothing to share but your sickness. That's not the rules anymore, but that's the way I was raised, and so that's what I still think. Unfortunately, I was raised a certain way in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't vary very much from them. I'm a book thumper. I'm a traditionalist. I beat the crap out of people who don't understand what a tradition is all about. I've been fighting a war lately about that in my home group, and I'm going to keep on fighting, I guess, until I die. Everybody expects when something shitty's going on in the meeting, Carol's going to fix it. They just look to me to open my mouth and correct them. And I stopped doing it, so they're having to step up to the plate. But needless to say, I got involved with a group of people that were very, very much into the big book. It took me 8 months into sobriety to accept the fact that I was a real alcoholic. I kept listening to these stories, like Annette was she was in a windmill, and she stuck her head out. She was Bossy the Cow. And then one time she was in a nut board, and she was going to be a spy for the FBI, and she was hiding behind a mop, and I'm going, this woman's nuts. But I kept coming back because she had the best stories. And I used to think, you know, I don't have that kind of story. I know when I finally did tell my story, I spruced it up a little. I don't know about you, but I made it look a little bit better than it was. I had to get honest about that later on. But the reality of for me is I had to go from my fantasy of my alcoholism and my behavior to the reality, because you people showed me how through the book. I had to start working the steps. I had to start being Carol right now, who I am. And I didn't like who that was. And I got to go to a lot of meetings with a lot of people who worked the programs. They didn't talk about their husbands and their wives and their kids. And you know, that asshole did this to me. He'd say, I went through this situation, I worked this step. I accepted that I was an alcoholic. That's not too tough. I do that to people now that ask me, they ask me to sponsor them, and I said, are you a drunk? Yeah. Are you a little wacko? Yeah. Is there anything out there besides yourself that you believe in? Maybe a little. Then work your 4-step. That's how I was taught. And the reality of it for me is when I can get to that 4-step and start putting down who I really am, Carol, the drunk, the bad behavior, the person who hated what she was doing and didn't know how to stop. And I came into you people and you say, this is what we do in order not to pick up the drink. I can't do it by myself. I can't do anything by myself. And I have come to know that, and it's okay. I believe that today. It was, you know, if you get here and you think you're wonderful, you're probably on drugs. Just saying. Because there was one girl that did, and she was just so happy to be there. She was just so wonderful. And her pupils were like this. I mean, if you're not coming in dragging your knuckles, you're probably not quite ready yet. And if you're new and you think you're different than we are, you may be different. We're weird. We're strange. I'm only speaking for myself, but I know a lot of people. And they're like grass. You gotta love us, though. You may not have to like us, but you gotta love us, because we are, if we're working the program like it's written in the book, not like I think I know how to do it or I can rewrite it. Some people I have to tell, would you just dumb down a little bit? You're just way too smart and you're killing yourself. Because really intelligent people can read the big book and say, this isn't very well written. You know, it's kind of schleppy. And now they got old language I don't even understand. I said, get a dictionary. Look up the words. They probably still have them somewhere, probably on one of those things. I'm an old dinosaur, and I have a cell phone, but it's never on. Not judging, just saying. And I don't go on Facebook, because I don't want some son of a bitch from 50 years ago to call me up and say I owe him money. Broken relationship. I don't know. I'm not going to risk it. I'm not going to do it. I've made all the amends I know how to make for all those people in the past that I remember. And that's one of the joys of being a blackout drunkard. Just for your information, if you can't remember it, you don't have to clean it up. I don't know where it says that in the big book, but it's my philosophy. And it's worked so far. So anyway, that being said, I got involved with a group of people that were, we were most of us, all of us single, and we ran together, we played together, we went to meetings together, we ran in a pack. And if you're new or fairly new and you can find a group of people that are similar, maybe not even the same, but maybe the same age range or like the same things, run together, because we cover one another. Sue Ellen said it, we have to be there for one another. I mean, there's some people in this program that I wouldn't give house room. But if they called me and asked me to help them to have something to do with sobriety, I would be there in a heartbeat, and I know they would be for me. I don't have to like you. My sponsor said I don't have to love you either. She says I have to pray for the willingness, and I have to do that with a few people. I would like to say I am really good now, and I behave all the time, and you guys can tell right now that's bullshit. And this is not being taped, right? I usually ask before I start mouthing off, is it? Oh, fuck you. Anyway, I got to run with some really great people. And there's about 20 of us together that stayed sober 1 year, 5 years. My sponsor had 12 years, and I thought she was a goddess. And she had sparklers coming out of her head. She just was wilder than a March hare. And I, you know, when she started twitching, you know, oh, God, and that's upset about something. I don't know what it is, but something's going on in her head, and we're going to hear about it. And if it isn't right, she's going to fix it or run them over with a tractor or something. I don't know. We were a crazy bunch, and it was wonderful. I learned how to laugh in sobriety. I learned how to dance in sobriety. I learned how to screw in sobriety. Go figure. Shut up. If I needed your help, I'd knock the shit out. Anyway, I do have multiple sobriety dates. So I have 44 years of sobriety, 39 years without a cigarette, and 30 years without getting laid. It's so sad. It's just so sad. I went to a conference in Turks and Caicos about 3 years ago, and I made that comment at a little meeting they had at 7:30 in the morning. I'm an early riser, and I went to that meeting, and there were lots of lovely people there, and I said that. I said, that's a long time sobriety, long time without cigarette, long time without getting laid. And this kid about 50 years old said, I'll take care of you. Jeez. And I the first time in my life, I think I was speechless. No, thank you. which scared the wee out of me. Because there's something about being sober in my right mind and being able to make judgment calls by the information I've gotten rather than making up the stories. If you're like me, I used to tell lies just because it was more fun. It had nothing to do with the reality or what the need was. It just was more fun. And then those days I could kind of remember the lies. Now I don't lie anymore because I can't remember my own name some days. So, I don't get really stoked up on that lying shit. I just know for me that the big book, from start to finish, I've gone through the book with a couple of people from the first blank page on. And I've learned a lot of information, a lot of history. I've been to a couple of those Las Vegas December things where they have all the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, how it started here and what it did there, and if by inches and breadth that we're even here. Because if somebody hadn't answered that telephone call from Bill when he called and ended up with Dr. Dodd, we wouldn't be here. If somebody had started making rules that we couldn't live by, we wouldn't be here. And this book tells me how to live my life in my own skin every day and be okay with who I am. That took many years. When I hit about 15 years sober, I got that, I can't tell anybody what a screw-up I am. They will, I'm a long time sober. I should be able to not do that anymore, right? So I started stuff and not telling the truth and not going to somebody I trusted. And I almost drank. And if it hadn't been for somebody who cared enough about me to yank my chain and say, "What are you doing?" I was only going to maybe one meeting a week instead of three or four or five or six or however many I wanted to go to. And I was just backing off. Because sometimes we get well. And I have seen so many people who got well die. Because they think they're okay and they try it again and they can't make it back. I was told by my sponsor, "You may have just pulled the last ticket on the roll. And if that's the case, you better not go anywhere." And today I still believe that. I know with my ego and my self-centered fear, if I chose to go back out again, I don't think I'd make it back. Number one, I wouldn't have the chutzpah to come here and say, "I did that." I wouldn't be able to go to people like Sue Ellen and all the people I sponsor and say, I'm a newcomer. I don't want to ever have to be forced to do that. So I stay with the group. I don't stay in the center of the pack anymore. That's for the newcomer. That's for the ones that are hurting, the ones that just can't quite get it. That's when the old-timers should be circling that group and holding on to them and keep them compacted in there so they know that they had value. I didn't know when I got here that I had value. I didn't know that I had anything but my sickness. And I was told one time, "Well, this is a closed meeting. You can say anything you want." And so I did. Well, I had this dear, sweet old-timer come up, put his arm around me and said, "Honey," right away I knew I was in trouble. "We don't wash our dirty linen in an AA meeting. That's for your sponsor." And he was so sweet, and I felt like something on the bottom of his shoe. But I heard what he said. That one time I heard what he said, and so I went to my sponsor and I started. She had this front room fireplace and this chair that was, you sat in that chair, you were going to be talking to your sponsor stuff. Most of us would come in that room, we'd all sit anywhere else but in that chair when we were having a party, because we didn't want to be associated with that chair. But that was the chair, that was my truth chair. And that got me in the habit of telling the truth to somebody. That's not always the easiest thing to do for us, because we're used to duck and cover. And I didn't know what would happen if I told the truth. Whether if you really knew who I was, you wouldn't like me, or I'm not good enough. And what I didn't realize that we're none of us good enough, really. If you think about it, I'm not good enough to be in the room with you people, except Alcoholics Anonymous says I am. My higher power says I am. I have a higher power today that is, he forgives me, he, she, it, I don't care. He forgives me everything I bring to him, and then he forgets. I heard at a retreat up in Malibu in April that the miracles in my life are so big I can't see the edges. And to me, that is a gift that I did not deserve. I don't deserve today, but I have it because you people show me how to live in my own skin today. And if you can't do that right now, we'll help you. And if you don't know what to do, just stand there. We'll circle around you. I'm a hugger. I love to hug newcomers. They're stiff on the board. And what you do is you keep hugging them, and they keep stiffing. And then about 3 weeks, 4 weeks into this, you don't hug them anymore. And they're going to say, "Are you mad at me?" So I get you. Now, being an old lady, dirty old lady, actually, I squeeze fannies. And the wives don't even care, which is sad. I mean, I'm so harmless that squeezing a fanny doesn't offend the wives. I just, there's no fairness in the world. But I understand the fair is not necessarily going to be okay, or justice. I pray for justice for you and mercy for me. And that is the self-centered alcoholic. I want you to get paid for what you have done. And I don't want to. I'm okay. I want to get away with it. But usually I can't. We were talking on the way over here that it's amazing how I may not always see what I'm doing that's unattractive or not very good or out of the loop of the program. And somebody who I trust, and I have given people I sponsor the permission to yank my chain when I'm getting to be a real bitch, to, you know, tell me. Let me know. I can't change or fix something that's broken if I can't see it. And that's why I get to go to a lot of meetings. I get to have a talk with my sponsor on a fairly regular basis. I talk with my sponsees on a regular basis. And there's, I went to a lady today, and she had done a little 10-step. And the thing about sharing with somebody else is the fact that you start sharing back. You learn what that person's really all about, a little bit of their story, where they came from, where they're going, what their dreams are. My dream today is just to live sober today. If I make it through tomorrow, fantastic. If I don't, oh well. I have a lot of things I want to do yet. I have been a world traveler. I started traveling at 21, and I think last year or the year before, I get confused. I went on a trip that took me to London and to Paris, and unfortunately my mind was booked differently than the two people I went with, and so I ended up going to Munich and then back to Los Angeles, and that was a 16-hour flight, and I'm telling you, by the time I got home, I said, I'm never doing this again. But I'm starting to forget a little bit about that, so I may do it again. Who knows? But I'm allowed to do that. I worked. When I got sober in 71, I went to work at Clovis Unified School District at 73. In 73, I worked there till 94. Then I worked 5 years at Pavarola House, and then I retired. And now I'm busier than a one-armed paper hanger. I have no idea how I managed to work all those years and get anything done. Everybody says, oh, well, Auntie Carol's, she's retired, she can do it. And I usually do. I do it with the people in AA, I do it with my family. I have learned that I have skills in some areas and no skills in other areas, and that's okay. I used to think I had to be perfect in everything, and I was perfect in nothing. You people said, just do the best you can. Deal with what's going on in front of you. And my mantra, and everybody who knows me knows it, is just, it's none of your business. People talk about the hula hoop that we put around ourselves to protect ourselves and others. I have a dog collar. I'm not allowed a big hula hoop because I'll fix you, by God. I'll make you okay. And then I have to go to the point, and if you want my opinion, ask for it. Because I no longer give it to you when you don't. I did that for a long time, too. I thought, well, I have all the answers. After all, I'm sober, yada, 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 many years. I have the answers, right? And then you see that they start backing up a little bit further and a little bit further. And oops, did it again. And I tell myself, Carol, you are a drunk among drunks. You are not better than or worse than. Some days I'm better than you, my behavior. Some days I'm worse. And there's no bad alcoholics. I don't think we want to do things that are unattractive or bad for us or bad for people around us, but sometimes I don't remember that. That's why I have to go to a lot of meetings. That's why I still read the book. That's why my friend who lives in my back house, that was another thing. I'll go back to that little trip when I got my boyfriend in AA, and that was lovely, except it turned out about a year into this whole relationship, he decided he was gay. Whoops! Okay. By that time, I loved him, and we played well together, and that was fine, because like I said, sand in the hoo-hoo doesn't do me any good anyway, so we were fine with that. So anyway, but we played well together, and we were together for 21 years, and when he died, everybody said, well, you should get another boyfriend. I said, it took too much work to straighten his ass up 21 years. I'm not doing that again, and I haven't. But I have a friend who lives in my back house, and we say our prayer and our readings every morning and pray for our friends. And today, people say, well, I can't pray for myself, and I can't pray for others. And what I do, I have learned to do over the years, is say in our readings and prayers every morning, is that thank you for health and prosperity. I just assume that he's going to give it to me. I don't have to ask for it. My higher power grants me those things. Maybe he doesn't give me $1 million, because he probably knows I'd go out and spend it on stupid stuff and probably get in real big trouble. I mean, God knows, $1.50 I can have. $100,000, it's you're going to die. So, I mean, I accept that. But I, at my age, I'm almost 80. I'm above ground, sucking air. I'm on no meds. I give blood every 8 weeks because I can. And people, every time I go in to give blood, they say, what meds are you on?
None.
Really? And then, or they take my blood pressure when I weigh 300 pounds. They take my blood pressure, and that was 120 over 65. And they take it 3 times just to make sure that they were not, it wasn't broken. And so that's a gift that I didn't know I was going to have. Apparently, I didn't do enough damage with my drinking to throw my body out of whack. Some people do. I know so many people that have major health problems. And with cancer, people in my life right now seem to pop up with that. And they would give their... I was going to be really tacky about what they were going to give. Okay. I've already screwed this whole thing up. It's their left testicle to not to have to be able to say, oh, if I just stop doing this, I will be healed. And all we have to do is stop drinking. Well, that's not all. That's the beginning. When I was new in sobriety, and they would tell me I needed to do this. And I said, oh, okay, I can do that. And then they would tell me one more thing. And by the way, you know, they're sneaky. Sneaky people, sponsors especially. Because they don't tell you the whole ball of wax. If you don't have to do everything all the time, they just slip them into you one at a time when you're not looking. And all of a sudden, you're doing what they told you to do. And you go, how did that happen? I wasn't paying attention. And now I'm going to meetings, and I'm helping newcomers, and I'm being a secretary, and I'm doing whatever they tell me to do. And I don't know I'm being led on a path of, I don't know. I don't know what this path is. I'm still finding out every day. But I know the path that I am on today works for me. I don't know what will work for you. I do know that the people in my life work the program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't get into the end of stuff. Because, you know, if I did it once, it's a thing. Twice, it's a habit. 3 times, it's an obsession. And I have to go to 100 A meetings, different kinds, and I just don't have the time. And so my life surrounds my higher power in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I've got another something going on, I'll figure out a way to do that. But usually it's through the program, just asking God to help me overcome whatever. You know, I'm obsessive, compulsive, neurotic, psychotic, whatever those words are. I'm not really sure. I was telling somebody that, my friend has started a meeting, and it's the LBGYN, I don't know, all those letters, I don't know what the hell they mean. They said, that's a gynecologist. And I said, no, you know, the lesbian, gay, whatever. It's a new meeting, I'm announcing it, and so it doesn't matter. Because I don't care who you are or what you believe. If you're an alcoholic, this is where I found hope. And I didn't know hope was going to be learning how to make my bed. You know, dinky sponsors say, what are you doing today?
I don't know. I don't mow my board. I don't nothing.
Make your bed. What's that got? I can't go out of my house today without making my damn bed. Don't know. I don't know that I live alone with four dogs. Who gives a crap? But I make my bed. And then you call them back and they say, now take a shower. Why? I'm not. Well, you just do what you're told. That's what I was told in the beginning. Just do what I tell you to do. I had a sponsor. She was not a suggestive person. She didn't suggest squats. She said, you will do. And so I did. She scared the crap out of me. I don't know what she was going to do with me. Throw me to the wolves or what? I don't know. But she said, do it. I did it. Later on, I got a nicer sponsor. Lady I sponsored, she had 5 years sober when I gave up my other sponsor for whatever reason. And she was my sponsor for 27 years. And she was the one who loved me unconditionally and was not fooled by my bullshit. She used to work in my office and she'd come in and shut the door. And I thought, oh, God, what did I do? And she said, the girls out there want me to talk to you. Okay. So because they give me any authority, I'm going to beat you to death with it. So no, never give me any authority. I just love it. Love being able to tell people what to do when it's legitimate. You know, I have the power. So most of the time I don't do that anymore either. I don't get in a place where I'm that involved with anything. I'm involved in the Fresno Fellowship. I was a treasurer for 4 years, and now I'm the chair of the steering committee, and I have another 6 months to do, and I'm done with that. I take a meeting now and again just to keep my hand in to let them know that old-timers can actually make coffee and clean up afterwards, too. Some people, when they get enough time, they think, well, I've been there, done that. Don't have to do it anymore. I'm not one of those. I'm a believing if you're sober and you can move, you are of service somewhere. I'm on teleservice. I get the 4:30 to 10:30 at night, and I'm grateful I don't have the 2:00 in the morning ones anymore, because the drunks call up at 2:05 and want you to bring them a bottle or bring them a pack of cigarettes and stuff like that. And I'm at 2:00 in the morning, I'm not a nice person. Let me tell you, I am not a morning person. I get up early so that I can get some things going for a couple of hours, so that by the time Sam comes in the house and we do our prayer and meditation, I don't kill him. That's the best time to work for me, because you know, I've got nothing else to do but do the work, because I'm not talking to you. My mother lived with me when she got older, and she was a picker. And she'd just pick at me in the morning. Until like God said, Ma, leave me alone. She said, oh, well, you're just like that. And I said, why the fuck don't you leave me alone then? What part of that is so hard? So she got to the habit of not getting up out of her room until I went to work. And then I come back at noon and we had lunch together. It was nice, and I was a human being by then. And most of the people who know me don't mess with me in the morning. If you want the truth from me in the morning and you ask me, you're going to get it. With not a whole lot of love and caring. And I have come to know myself that well. This program teaches me who I am. Some things everything in my life could use improvement, because I'm not perfect, and I tend to be a little wacky. Not a little wacky, a whole lot wacky. And I don't care. The older I get, the less I'm concerned about making you like me. When I first got here, I worked my butt off to make people like me, especially the ones I didn't like. And that doesn't make sense. You know, if you're trying to kiss ass to somebody you don't like, and they come up to like you, then what are you doing? You are stuck with somebody you don't like. I tell you, some of us are not wrapped too tight, and I got to see what time it is. I can't see the clock in the back. Shit, I got a lot of time. You guys are going to suffer for a little bit longer. But I can say, the longer I'm sober, the more I know who I am. I can accept the fact that I'm not perfect, but I'm doing the best I can today. yesterday's history, tomorrow's a mystery, and if I'm pissing on today, nothing's happening good in my life. And I like my life. I like who I am. I would like to be a little stronger. I waddle now. It's so sad. When I walk, I kind of waddle because if I fall over, God knows I might not get up again. When I was drinking, I could walk and trip and tuck and roll like a big dog and up and drop my head. In early sobriety, I'd do that, and I'd be walking along, and Ray turned around and he says, "Oh, Carol, fell down again," and I'm rolling and getting up. I can't do it anymore. That's about the only thing that really bothers me. I don't mind being who I am and looking how I look and feeling how I look, except I can't walk by myself anymore anywhere because I'm afraid I'll fall down. A couple of years ago, I stepped over a wall and caught one toe and went and broke my wrist and had to back up to get to the wall to get back up again. And this Yahoo was down the wall on his cell phone. I don't know whether he was picturing me or laughing at me or just playing with himself. I have no idea, but I thought, "You could have come and helped me, you putz." I said, "I hope you're a drug addict and don't get clean. Wouldn't make him alcoholic." And I said that to a kid, and he said, "You know what would be worse?" And I said, "What?" He said, "A drug addict who got clean and had to clean up his mess." I said, "Well, I'll wish for that then." Because I know for me, I can be okay with who I am most of the time because the program tells me just precisely. I like it says that this is precisely what we have to do. It doesn't say kind of, sort of, or less maybe. It says this is precisely what we do to stay sober. And it's in these pages. And there are openings and doors and places to go for every kind of drunk there is. Nobody is so special or so different or so unique that they can't get sober with this book. Not that I've seen anyway. And those who choose to go back out over and over and over again, I fear for them because I know. Every once in a while I say, "Just go get so ripped you can't walk anymore and then come back and stay with us. But if you can't do it, come back anyway because we want the best for you. For anybody who walks through these doors, we want the best for you. We want you to be able to stay sober and live clean and happy and joyous." Like the book says, I have a problem with people that are always negative, always whining. "Oh, they're for me. I'm on the cross, jeez." And then somebody will say, "Get off the cross, we need the wood," and you know, loving, kind things. You know, what can I tell you? Sometimes we're not the most loving, expressive people. But sometimes I need that. Sometimes I need somebody to be really real with me. There are a couple of people in the world that don't love me, and that's okay. I can three right off the top I can tell you about who's taken my inventory during a meeting out loud, and that's their opinion. I've come to know that I have opinions, but what I really need to share is my experience. My opinion is just like yours. We all have it. Something I'm not familiar with, and I have opinion about it, and I don't know how to fix it or make it any different. But my experience in this, this, and this, I can tell you precisely what I had to do to get through deaths, losses. More and more in my life, I'm getting losses because most of the people I got sober with are no longer alive. Of the 20 plus people that ran together, I'm trying to think, who is still alive? Maybe failure. Most of them are gone. And I'm still here. And I'm still putting it out there as best I can. And I'm still doing the deal that I was taught to do in the very beginning. Like Sue Ellen said, if you are new and you're scared, just lean on somebody. Take their hand. Make them talk to you. You go up to them if they won't come up to you. I get really pissy when people in a meeting, there's newcomers and people won't go over and give them phone numbers or invite them to coffee. That was the first thrill I had in sobriety is when the Friday night meeting at the Village, everybody went to the meeting. Of course, every meeting was 8:30 to 10. I can't do that anymore. I go to 5:30 and 6:30 meetings because I'm a little, I'm in bed by 8 o'clock and reading till 10 and whatever. But anyway, we'd go to 8:30 to 10. Then we'd go to some restaurant and eat sugar. We'd fight over the butter for the bread and all kinds of stuff like that. And then after that, we'd go over to somebody's apartment, usually Ray's, and we'd sit around and talk till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And one time they said, Carol, you're tired. Why don't you go in and go to bed? So I went in and go to bed. And I laid there the whole time trying to hear what they were saying. Honey, I said, screw it. And I went up, got up, went and laid down on the floor next to whoever was there so that I wouldn't miss anything. Because that's one of the fun parts of sobriety and staying sober is you don't want to miss anything. And somebody will say, well, did you go to such and such a meeting? No, you missed it. I don't, what did you miss? I don't know what you were supposed to hear, but you missed it. So I went to as many meetings as I go to, so I don't want to miss it. Because I didn't want to lose that glow that we get. I love it with newcomers when the girls who with their hair hangs down in their face and you can't see that they have eyes. And the guys all wear ball caps down to here. And then pretty soon the cap comes up and the hair goes back. And their eyes are starting to look around at people and seeing, I did that. I didn't think I did that. And your story starts becoming a real story rather than the one you made up. I have a real story. Most of the time I don't know what it is because my brain bounces all over the walls. But I know I'm sober. I know I live in my own skin today. I know I have people in my life today who care for me. I care for them. I didn't know anybody would ever care for me. I always felt like a turd in a punch bowl. You know, I don't know. And you guys said, okay, Terry, come with us. This one lady came in at 20 years old, and she's leaning against the wall. She says, how can we love you? Love a piece of shit like me. And my boyfriend said, it takes one piece of shit to know a piece of shit. And she was just astonished that anybody would say that to her. And she's 37 years sober now. And she's my sponsor. I have been allowed to have 4 sponsors in sobriety. 2 of them have died, and 1 dumped me because I was an asshole about something. I don't even know what it was, but that's okay. And then I got somebody who happened to be driving through town, and she was crazy, and she was asking my help, and I said, can you sponsor me? She said it was temporary, and it's been 5 years. She says, it's not temporary anymore. I need a sponsor. I need somebody. She has a sponsor. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I believe that. I need to have a sponsor who's worked the steps, who knows where to tell me where I'm at fault, where I was wrong, what's my part. I hate that. It's got to be your part. Come on. You're a jerk. But it doesn't matter whether you're a jerk or not. The reality of it is, what is my part? They talk about the 4th column. It's not a column like in the big book, but it's right after the columns where it says, and what did you do, basically? And what's your part? And when I get to write the 2nd column letter where I get to say what a jerk butt you are and what you did and how you abused me and yada, 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 and then I get to write it even. I just don't get to mail it. Then I go over to the 4th column and say, okay, what's my part in this? What did I do? Where was I wrong? And what do I have to clean up? What do I have to change? What do I have to pray for? Because I have nothing in my life except what my higher power has given me. No part of my life today is any of my doing. I just showed up and I stuck it out and I screwed up and I did stupid things, but I haven't had to pick up a drink. I only have 1 sobriety date, and that's not my doing. My higher power kept putting people in my way to stop me from doing what was my nature, which was to drink over good things. I mean, I'd break a shoelace and I had to have a drink. You talk mean to me and I have to go on a run. I was a bar drinker, and at the time, Hacienda was a big deal place, and the Desert Inn was a big deal place, and the Town and Country was a big deal place. Now the Desert Inn's a rehab center. Hacienda's a place for wounded women, and I think the Town and Country is just a dump. I have no idea. And then, of course, I went to Johnny's and the D-Marquee and the Pioneer and the Turf, and these are places where you go in a pack because you don't, you know, you keep your back to the wall at all times. Those are the kinds of places I ended up drinking and could have been hurt. I never was. But today, the only problems I have basically in my life are of my own making. when I choose to go against the principles that were put down in this book. And this book is full of promises and principles. And the promises, they're a list of 12, but there are, in the book there are multiple promises. If we do these things, our lives will change. If we do this, we will get better with our family. We don't always are not guaranteed our family comes back, but most of us, when we clean up our side of the street and really clean it up, frequently we get back with people we love. Maybe not husband and wife, that sometimes goes right up. Then, of course, there's the Al-Anons that stick it out forever, and I'm thinking, what is the matter with you people? I have to drink. I know that. I went to an Al-Anon meeting once in early sobriety, and it was a long, long time ago, and they kept talking about their alcoholic, and I thought, what am I, a pet? maybe a lion with a chain around my neck. That would work. But today I know that I'm nobody's pet. I'm nobody's plaything. I'm nobody's toy. I am the best girl I have ever been, and I can be done. It can be better and get better. And if I keep sticking with you people, do the things you do, I'll probably stay sober another day. Thank you. Thank you.